Good morning and welcome to the Law Matters program for another fortnight, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. It is our final show for 2010, but we will be returning in February next year, which is great. But to wrap up the program for the last show for the year, we'll be letting you know a whole lot of sort of important housekeeping information, like when we're closing, important contact details that you'll need if you need urgent criminal advice over the holiday period. And we'll also be letting you know about what are your rights if you do get arrested or get into a bit of strife. What are your legal rights, particularly for our young people? We're going to give you a list of what to do and what not to do that will hopefully provide you with a bit more information on that. Being the final show for the year as well, going to reflect upon some of the important issues that the Aboriginal Legal Service has been involved in this year, talking pretty generally about the overrepresentation of Aboriginal peoples within the court system and the prison system as well, and touching on some of the very big and important issues that we've been involved in this year, such as the Ward matter, and also looking at the issue of the use of tasers by WA police as well. But to kick off the program on this Wednesday, I'm joined by Link Ugal, who is a prisoner support officer working out of the Law and Advocacy Unit of the Aboriginal Legal Service. Good morning. Welcome to you, Link.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very good. Your first time here on our show. How are you going?
Not too bad. A bit nervous, but I suppose, you know, as we go along, get over it, I suppose.
Yeah, no worries at all. Now, a Ugal. Few Ugals listening, you know, I imagine. Where are you from? Tell us a bit about yourself.
Okay, the Ugal family, mainly from Beverley. My father was born in Beverley. He's always said he was born on a horse and cart between Brookton and Beverley. So he was from Beverley. He moved to Perth, where he had us five kids. So I'm from Perth.
All right. Now, you work in the area of prisoner support, which means that you're going out and you're visiting our people on the inside at various prisons around the Perth area, but you're no stranger to working within a prison. Tell us some of the places you've worked at over the years and the sort of work that you've done there.
Okay. 2001, I started working in the prison systems as a mentor with the Department of Corrective Services in Mirrabooka Branch. So I used to take care of the clients, or help them out with taking them to and from appointments, just catching up with them on a daily basis. And that was going great for about 9 months, juveniles as well as adults. And I just applied for a position at Acacia Prison and was successful, and it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. There was only two of us. And it was such a large prison and a high demand. There was quite a few Aboriginal prisoners in there. So it was only two of us and about at least 600 plus prisoners.
Mm.
So it was pretty demanding. But I did my best. And, I do see some of the guys that I did help in 2002. I see them on the streets now and everything's all kosher so far. So hopefully they do stay out. And from Acacia, I applied for a position in Grenfell Prison as the PSO, Prisoner Support Officer, and that was great. I was out of my comfort zone. I was in a new area. I was in Yamatji country, and it was great. It took a while before the guys up there took a warming to me once they got to know me and I can help them. And it was great. Got on well with all the officers and the people up there. Great. And Geraldton, the beaches are great. Seafood's great. And then I got a transfer to Warraloo, where I spent the last probably 3 years there, or 2 years, 2.5 years. So that was pretty good.
So what actually attracted you to working within the justice system?
I think wanting to help. I always wanted to help the young offenders. I have a sister that works in the Department of Corrective Services, and she's been there for years, and always wanted to help them, try and keep them away from going into prison. It's not the life for them. You know, they should be outside and enjoying themselves, and, you know, because we need a lot more young Aboriginal people out there being role models. So I decided to take the position as a mentor, try and help them, give them advice.
Later in this hour, we'll be discussing more about the over-representation of Indigenous peoples within the prison system when the Director of Legal Services with the ALS, Peter Collins, joins us. But that must be a real stark reality when you actually walk into any prison environment and see the huge number of our people who are incarcerated.
It is disturbing, especially when you see three generations of the same family, the son, the father and the grandfather, and I've only really seen that once, and it didn't look nice, but, you know, it happens. It's just life, I suppose. But a lot of them all come in, well, a lot in their late teens, 18, 19, early 20s. So there's a lot of young people in there.
You've come aboard the Aboriginal Legal Service in July this year, joining the ever-expanding Law and Advocacy Unit, which used to be a handful of people doing a fantastic job, and thankfully now there's been more funding that's made available to expand on the position. So you've got a social worker in the unit, you've got prisoner support officers. Tamara, we met a couple of weeks on the show, working specifically with young people, policy officers. It's fantastic, isn't it?
It is great, and I work closely with the social worker, and I get ideas from him. After we see a client, I always sit and talk to the social worker, and we try and bounce off ideas from each other and see if we can come up with a better solution for the client. Sometimes it is interesting, and it can be a bit grueling.
So as a prisoner support officer, Link, what does that work involve? And importantly, what support is available for people on the inside?
Okay, support on the inside, well, the support that we give, basically we get referrals from either family members or they just ring up ALS. Most of the referrals that I've been receiving are probably from the solicitors that we work with in the unit. It's a lot to do with just welfare checks, make sure that everything's okay, catching up with them all, and if they've got any complaints, health concerns, any concerns they have, whether it is with their prison sentence or parole, if they need any help with getting housing or work opportunities. So we try and steer them in the right direction there, or help them, see if they can do any courses.
Okay, what sort of other questions do they ask you? Do you get asked questions about people who are wanting to try to attend funerals or who would maybe like a visit from somebody in their family that they haven't seen for a while? Do you get those sort of inquiries as well?
Funerals we do quite a lot. We'll get referrals coming in, and we'll try and work with the client. And also I always like to let the prisoner support officer know at the prison that information that I have received, I'll pass it on to them so we can try and help the client get to the funeral.
How important do you think it is having that role that you provide in sort of making sure that the lines of communication stay open between our clients and the prison staff?
It is important. We just, at the moment, it's just filling the gaps, and we've got quite a few clients. I've got 20 clients at the moment, and you've only got so many workers within the prison, two Aboriginal support workers, and they're the PSOs. So they've got the whole prison to always try and help, especially with the young clients. So we're just the fill the gaps in and try and help when we can, and it's starting to get out there now that we're helping them out.
And what prisons are you attending each week?
Each week I try to attend Casuarina Thursdays and Warraloo. It's one off, but most of my clients are in Casuarina. And I do Eastern Goldfields and Roebourne.
You go to Roebourne as well?
Roebourne was great. I went up there in August to see one client, and it turned out that I had about 43 clients to see.
More than one.
More than one.
Oh, that's fantastic that it's great. Expanded into regional areas as well. Yep. Is it similar needs? Is it similar,
very similar
queries of how people need assistance from, say, Eastern Goldfields to Roebourne to back to Perth?
With Roebourne, it was mainly to do with the treatment they were receiving within the prison. was unfairly and unjust, and a couple of parole plans. The guys get knocked back on parole, and then we try and put in another parole plan, but only if it changes in extreme circumstances, we can help them with that. Essendon Goldfields, planning a trip there next year, hopefully early January or early February, planning a trip to Essendon Goldfields.
What do you like best, Link, about the work that you do?
Getting out of the office. Getting out of the office, sometimes that phone does drive me crazy. I do turn it down. So if I see a little red light flashing, that's my phone. But just to get out and talk to the guys, try and help as much as we can. And if I can't help, I always come back and speak to my manager or the social worker, see if we can help them out as much as we possibly can.
All right. So if we've got family members listening in who would like some advice or to know whether you're in a position to actually assist in any way, what do they need to do?
They can either ring Alice and just ask for the Law and Advocacy Unit. And we've got a lovely receptionist there. She'll put us through to, well, they'll put the phone call through to the appropriate support worker. She's got a list of all the prisons that we work. So there's two of us that do the male offenders, and we're split up into prisons. So if you do need to contact us, just ring the Law and Advocacy Unit in ALS, and the beautiful or helpful receptionist lady will put you through to myself or Ray Gidget.
Okay, now it is getting up to Christmas, not long to go, not many sleeps. What message would you like to send out?
Well, I'd like to wish everyone a good Merry Christmas and all the best for the new year, and hopefully next year we have less Aboriginal offenders in prison.
Excellent. Link Ugle, thanks for joining us on Law Matters. Your very first time today, thank you, and we'll be hearing more from you in the new year, hey?
Thank you, no worries.
Link Ugle, Prisoner Support Officer with the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. This is Law Matters, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service. I'm Jodie Hoffman. Coming up shortly, Kenny Sutton joins us. Kenny is the manager of our Court Officer Unit. Going to have some really handy tips for you on what to do if you're arrested. Welcome back to the program. We're going to talk about now some important sort of legal do's and don'ts. We're heading right into the festive season. In fact, it's well underway. But Kenny Sutton is the manager of our Court Officer Unit and is regularly working within our court systems and with our young people. And I guess, Kenny, firstly, welcome to the show.
How you going, Jody?
Very good, mate. This time of year, a lot of people out, a lot of celebrating going on, a lot of partying, and I guess an extra police presence on the streets as well.
Oh, for sure, especially in the major areas like Northbridge and Fremantle and that, yeah. There's always a strong police presence, as they would put it, yeah.
You've got an extensive sort of career behind you of working with our young people. Mm-hmm. When you're going into seasons like Christmas, what are some of the more common reasons that people are getting picked up?
Mainly the disorderly conducts, the breaching the move-on notices, unfortunately, now that are around at this stage. I'm not too sure when the new behavioural prohibitive orders come in, but, you know, that's something obviously we need to look at next year in one of our shows, obviously, to give a rundown about that. But mainly in the in the Northbridge area and the Fremantle areas where the police presence and also on the foreshore on Australia Day, I think we need to, you know, just bear in mind. You know, a lot of those areas are heavily policed at the moment, and just the do's and don'ts I think we need to touch base on in regards to what your legal rights are. So.
It is difficult, isn't it? I mean, if people are pulled over by the police or arrested or sort of questioned on the street, difficult for anybody, let alone our young people, to actually know, hang on a minute, what information do I have to give over? Mm. What don't I have to give over? Let's start with young people. If you've got somebody who's under the age of 18 and they're apprehended by the police and questioned, what's the procedure from there on in?
Well, the procedure there is if they haven't committed any offence and they're just specifically being picked up in the Northbridge area, I don't know if there's a curfew in Fremantle or not, but in the Northbridge area there's a curfew at 10 o'clock, and what happens is the police will take them to what they call the JAG unit in the city. I think that's run by Missing Australia, and obviously they contact the parents and then they take them home, I believe, after that, or the parents come and get them. So... first of all, when they are picked up, a lot of our kids, you know, don't want, are pretty reluctant, or anybody really, in regards to giving their names. But if a police officer asks your name, you have to give it. It's actually law. The only other time when you have to give your name and address and your date of birth is when you're a driver of a car as well. So they're the only two instances where you have to provide your name and your date of birth and your address as well. So,
And if the matter goes further than that, and you're taken into custody or down to the station for a bit of questioning, you have to give more information once that happens?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you don't. Your only legal obligation is your name, your date of birth and your address. So they try and force you to do a video record of interview or make a statement. It is your legal right to refuse that. We advise people not to give a video record of interview, and it's your legal right that you do not have to give a video record of interview. So First thing of all, when you are arrested, you ask if you are being arrested, and you ask them what for, quite obviously what the charge is. And then once you're arrested, quite obviously what I just explained is you don't have to give a video record of interview, and then you just ask whether or not you're going to be bailed or not, or you're going to be summoned. So the procedure after that is the sergeant of the police station will quite obviously consider whether or not you should be bailed or not. If you're a juvenile, quite obviously they'll need to contact a responsible person, and then that will occur then. If you are not given bail by the police, then what will happen is you'll be taken to the East Perth lockup if you're an adult, and if you're a juvenile, you'll obviously be taken to range you. Now, East Perth lockup, they have a court on Saturdays or public holidays, and out at Rangeview now they're starting Saturday courts out at Rangeview and also on public holidays as well. So that only started about 6 months ago, which is really good.
So what stage would the ALS usually be called in on things? Would we get a call?
Well, quite obviously, once they're arrested and detained, they have the legal right to make a phone call and quite obviously speak to an ALS representative. We have an after-hours service that's always available, so you just got to ring up and get some advice over the phone. So one of our lawyers is on call 24 hours a day now. So,
and if you've got an under 18-year-old who's called in for questioning, should there be another adult with that person who's not part of the police service, or...?
There is, but when they can't locate a responsible person, which is the case in many of our kids' situations, they normally call in a JP, a Justice of the Peace. So, you know, quite obviously they sit in as prisoner friends, but whether or not they provide the appropriate... legal support that's required for our kids is another thing. So that's why we just tell everybody not to do a video record of interview, and that's their legal right. So
is it the same rule for those who are over 18, for adults?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it is.
Does anything change?
They can always request a prisoner's friend, yep. So that's their right under the Police Procedure Act, I think it's called. If they request a prisoner's friend, and somebody can always be in a video record of interview when they start. But as I've stressed before, we advise everybody not to do a video record of interview, because any admissions that you make on that video record of interview can be used against you in a court of law. So.
All right. Well, look, let's run through those arrest do's and don'ts again. As I say, there is obviously, you know, at this time of year, a very strong police presence on the streets. There's also an extreme amount of people who are sort of out in Northbridge and surrounding areas and in the suburbs, anywhere, in fact, at this time of year. So things to remember if you are apprehended and, in fact, arrested.
The police must make it clear to you that you are under arrest. They can tell you that you are under arrest, or they can touch you or hold you and ask you to go with them, or tell you to stay where you are. If they are in plain clothes, they will tell you they are police officers and show you identification such as a police badge. The police should also tell you why you are being arrested, unless the reason is obvious. If they do not tell you, you should ask.
And if all fails, you just call us, Kenny, hey? If you've got someone who's been arrested and is sort of doesn't know what to do, they can call us and there's help available 24 hours a day?
Yeah, our ALS after hours number is 9265 6644, and yeah, just ring that, and as I said, there's a duty lawyer on call, so they'll ring you back if you can't get through, they'll ring you back as soon as possible. So,
and I know that it's not just in Perth that people listen to Law Matters. You can actually hear the program after it's gone to air on our own Aboriginal Legal Service website, and I'll give you the details of that at the end of the program. But if you are using that that phone number during the dates when we're actually closed over the Christmas and New Year period, just ring 08 in front of it, and 089 265 6644 will get you through to our after hours duty lawyer at any time when the office is closed. Kenny, you've got some other important dates for us with courts and whatnot.
Yeah, the office actually will be closed as of the 25th, and we reopen again on the 5th of January. So between Christmas and New Year's, there's duty lawyer will be operating down at Central Law Courts. There'll also be a duty lawyer down at the Children's Court as well. Now, if you are arrested over the weekend or on the public holidays, there's a East Perth lockup will be sitting, a magistrate's court there, and there'll also be a court out at Rangeview for the juveniles. So that's on Saturdays and on the public holidays as well.
All right, any other info we need to know?
I think that's about it, eh? And just remember, your mob, if you do come in contact with the police, don't get too cheeky, eh?
And it is Christmas. Christmas message to our communities, Kenny.
Yeah, just have a very merry and a safe Christmas, guys, and we'll see you next year.
Thanks. Kenny Sutton, the manager of the Court Officer Unit with the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA, here on 6NME 100.9 FM Noongar Radio. Jodie Hoffman with you on the Law Matters program, brought to you every fortnight by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. It is our final program for 2010, and so pretty timely to sort of just have a think about some of the big issues that have been occurring over the last 12 months. And joining us for the last segment for the year is our Director of Legal Services, Peter Collins. G'day, Pete. How are you going?
Good, thanks, Jodie. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. It has been an absolutely huge year, and I guess the thread that joins everything is the continued overrepresentation of our people within the criminal justice system, hey?
It does, Jode. I've been the Director of Legal Services since 2005, and in that six-year period, things haven't changed much for the better at all. In fact, they've remained static at best and probably gotten worse in some areas. And if I can just give you a bit of a snapshot of what I'm getting at, the most recent statistics indicate that Aboriginal people, adults in WA, are in prison 26 times more than non-Aboriginal people. In the case of kids, it's 45 times more than non-Aboriginal kids. WA has the highest imprisonment rate, arguably, of Indigenous people of any place in the world, including the US, which many of your listeners will know imprisons their community at a very high rate as well.
Pete, you're like myself from the eastern states. You've come across the border, and it's a stark difference, isn't it, when you go into WA in terms of the overrepresentation of Indigenous peoples and the legislation, a whole range of issues.
That's true, Jodie. I think I'm from Melbourne originally, and the contrast between a place like Melbourne and even Perth is quite incredible and really disturbing in many ways. Just the way that Aboriginal people are targeted by police, are in contact with the police for the most trivial sorts of things all the time, and therefore always in court and in turn locked up, as I say, is a really stark contrast to what the situation is like in places like Melbourne and elsewhere in the eastern states.
I know that our CEO, Dennis Eddington, has mentioned a few times on this program that if you were running any other business, you'd actually be proud and pleased with its expansion, but the fact that The ALS, which started 36 years ago as a tiny little operation out of Perth, has now grown to 18 offices across the state, in excess of 110 staff, I think, working throughout Western Australia. It's a huge area, isn't it? And a shame that there needs to be so much service in this area.
It is a shame. It's a real... I think it's a tragedy, even more so, Jody. I think... the numbers of people coming into the justice system increases every year, and that's a reflection of a whole lot of things. The role of the police can never be underestimated, but also the introduction of really punitive laws which enmesh Aboriginal people in the justice system is also a big factor as well. And if you look at this year, for example, at the start of the year, those laws came in which involving assaults on police which caused police an injury, which attract a mandatory term of imprisonment. So that means if somebody is charged with assaulting the police and the police officer is, for example, scratched during the assault or receives a small bruise, that's the sort of offence which can see somebody have to go to jail, and that applies to kids as well. So I've had cases this year where a young boy from Perth, 17, never been in trouble before, a really good kid doing a traineeship organised through the Australian Medical Association, got on the grog, had a bad night and assaulted a police officer, causing a small cut, nothing earth-shattering, and he faced the prospect of being locked up for 3 months in Banksy Hill and, as I say, never been in trouble before. It's a terribly harsh and unjust sort of sentence for that sort of offending. And then you move forward to recent events and you've got the passing of the prohibitive behaviour orders legislation, which includes naming and shaming. And that'll mean that if you commit what's called an antisocial offence on more than two occasions, an order can be made against you. Say you dealt with for graffiti. If you do that on a couple of occasions and your graffiti's in an area like Northbridge, you can be banned from all of the Northbridge area. And if you go into Northbridge when the order's in place, you'll be in breach of it and you can face the prospect of being locked up. So there's this whole raft of legislation which is part of a law and order regime, but we all know that Aboriginal people will end up bearing the brunt of these sorts of laws, end up in court, and more people will be going to jail.
And we usually tend to identify that, oh, you know, there's a lot of Aboriginal men in prison. Well, sadly, that's branched out a whole lot more. There's a lot of Aboriginal women in prison for you know, crimes of need, really. Yeah. Unpaid fines. People don't realise how serious unpaid fines can be. A lot of kids in prison, in detention centres.
Yep. There are more and more Aboriginal women in jail, as you've noted. A lot of those women are in jail because they haven't paid fines. And at the end of the day, if you don't pay a fine, you can go to jail because of that. So people need to be aware of that and try and take some steps to make a start on paying fines, because it'll come back to bite you on the bum eventually. But you're right, I mean, these poor women are in jail because they're poor and they can't afford to pay big fines for driving offences and that sort of thing. The situation with kids is just appalling, you know. WA locks up Aboriginal kids more than any part of the country, and on any given day there's 70 to 80% of the kids in custody are Aboriginal. A lot of them are in custody because they can't get bail. And, you know, that dovetails into the way the police treat Aboriginal kids. You know, we've had some pretty bad examples of kids being treated very poorly by the police. Many of your listeners will remember the case of the Freddo Frog boy who was charged with receiving a stolen Freddo Frog. Since then, we've had cases involving, for example, a young fellow with hardly any record, with an intellectual disability, who gets arrested by the police for receiving a stolen soft toy worth a couple of bucks. He ends up spending 3 or 4 nights in custody for a breach of a bail condition, which should never have happened. And it's hard not to think that if he had been non-Aboriginal, he wouldn't be treated in the same way by the police and the system and wouldn't have ended up in custody. And more recently, we had a young girl from the Kimberley who was only 11 years old who was charged with shoplifting some eyeliner. You know, I just can't understand the need to charge these young Aboriginal kids with these incredibly trivial offences. Surely there's a better way of dealing with these sorts of problems, but regrettably in WA, a lot of the time, police take an approach where if you're involved in this sort of stuff, you go to court. And I don't think it sends a very good message to Aboriginal kids in terms of their relationship with the police, and there's all the other consequences that we're aware of because of it.
We're not only providing legal support and representation for Aboriginal people throughout the state, but also advocating strongly and opposing current legislations that are in, and doing submissions and being part of hearings and a whole range of other areas that are going on behind the scenes. One of those areas that's hit the headlines very bigly, if I don't think that's a word, but in recent times, is of course tasers and the use of tasers by police.
Yeah. Look, the whole taser issue is another issue which is really quite disturbing and very troubling. And I'm sure all of your listeners are aware of what happened to Mr. Spratt, and that's terrible. But we've been advocating, as you say, to governments and the police our concerns about the use of tasers for several years now. And many of the case examples referred to by the CCC in the report, which mentioned Mr. Spratt, which was released in October of this year, many of those case examples were examples that the ALS had referred the CCC to. I think about 16 out of the 18 case examples referred to involved Aboriginal people being tasered by the police. And what it points up is that these tasers are being used indiscriminately for no good reason as what's called a compliance tool, that is to get somebody to do what the police want them to do, rather than for the purpose of preventing injury to the police or others by using the taser. So you have some awful instances where kids are being tasered by the police, where pregnant women are being tasered by police, where people are simply asking questions of the police about what's going on and they're zapped with a taser. That's bad enough in itself, but when you factor into the equation that a lot of Aboriginal people in our community suffer from very poor health, many people have heart conditions in particular, which may not have been diagnosed by a doctor, and it's not hard to think in those sort of situations that those people, if they're tasered, are going to be susceptible to either serious injury or perhaps even death. And that doesn't seem to enter the mindset of police when Aboriginal people are being tasered indiscriminately for no good reason.
Before we move on, Pete, during the last song we had a query from a listener wanting to know what is the difference between being detained and being arrested?
Look, there's not a lot of difference in practical terms, because if you're detained by the police, you're taken into their custody, and likewise, obviously, if you're arrested by the police. But if you're detained by the police these days, without getting into the technicalities of it too deeply, if you're detained without being arrested, the police have to tell you that you're free to go with them if you want to, if you choose to, but alternatively, you're free not to go with them. So if you've been detained by the police but haven't been arrested, you don't have to go with them. If you're arrested, you've got no choice in the matter and you're taken into police custody. I hope that's what the listener was asking for with that question.
Okay. It is the final program for 2010 from the Aboriginal Legal Service. We will be back in February, but I don't think you could end the year without touching on the very significant and traumatic case of the Ward matter, Pete.
No, you can't, Jodie. An incredibly sad an awful and unnecessary case involving the needless death of an Aboriginal man. The inquest obviously was held last year and pointed up the disgusting deficiencies in the way Mr. Ward was treated. This year, ALS has been assisting the family of Mr. Ward, and again, many of your listeners will know that ALS was successful in the middle of the year in securing an ex gratia payment for Mr. Ward and his family, which is a good thing and was appropriate given what had occurred. And the other good aspect of it was that the Attorney General apologised for what had happened, which was important because the government needed to acknowledge its role in what occurred, the wrongdoing, and how terribly needless his death was. Very disappointing, of course, that the decision was made not to lay any criminal charges against anyone arising out of the death. It seems to us at the ALS that if this is not... It's hard to imagine any other case in these sort of circumstances where charges shouldn't be laid. I mean, the people responsible for his care knew he was in a small van which didn't have the air conditioning working on a very hot day where he travelled a vast distance. If that's not criminally negligent, I don't know what is. But there you go, the decision's been made not to prosecute. Office of WorkSafe WA is, as I understand it, still considering whether or not it will lay any charges under the Occupational Health and Safety Act. Hopefully charges will be laid so that those responsible can be brought to account. And ALS is now considering whether or not it'll institute proceedings in relation to, against the company responsible for transporting Mr. Ward, now known as G4S. G4S has remained silent throughout all of this. There's been no public acknowledgement of their wrongdoing. There's been no public apology by them. And obviously, as part of that, there's been no offer by G4S to compensate Mr. Ward's partner and family. And their deafening silence over this is also really troubling. But ALS is considering its position insofar as suing them is concerned, guided, of course, by what Mr. Ward's widow wishes to do in relation to that.
Extremely hard too, I imagine, for the family members and community members suffering through such a loss, the actual time that all these stages take to get through.
Yep. Oh, look, you can never underestimate how terribly difficult it must be for Mr. Ward and his four young boys. They've gone through an indescribable trauma, and none of what happens with money, with apologies, with any of that is going to bring Mr. Ward back, and they're going to live with the trauma of his death and the knowledge of what happened to him for the rest of their lives, and nothing the ALS can do to assist that. And as part of that, as you say, the longer things drag on, the harder it must become for them as well. And, you know, no amount of money really is going to compensate the family for the loss of a really fine man.
Do you think procedures have changed enough since that to ensure that something like that can never happen again?
I think there's been some significant improvements in the way people in custody are now dealt with. There's always room for improvement, though. And it's an appalling state of affairs, to be blunt, Jodie, that it's required the death of a man in this sort of situation. It's required a death in that sort of situation for the system to be held account and to realise that some really significant changes need to be take place. And I think all we can hope for is moving forward that something like this is never ever repeated again. There's been some instances this year where people have been transported in vans where the air conditioning hasn't worked, where people have fallen very ill and suffered serious injury. Fortunately, no one's died. And again, really in 2011 and moving forward, that shouldn't happen in a civilised society, especially a society as affluent as Western Australia. The system's got to do better to treat people in custody with dignity, like human beings, and for the authorities to discharge their custodial care responsibility so that people get through trips between jails or police lockups and jails or those sorts of things. They get through those journeys safe and sound and they don't suffer injury or, even worse, die.
What inroads do you think that the ALS has made over the last 12 months? If we look back at significant matters like the ward matter, tasers, overrepresentation still continuing, there's a lot of hard work going on behind the scenes, isn't there, to ensure that there is a more just system for Aboriginal people?
Well, ALS is not the perfect organisation, as we all know, and from time to time we don't do things as well as we could, but we really do strive to make sure that we express on behalf of our clients our views in relation to these important issues, and we strive to advocate on behalf of reform with government and other relevant agencies. We point out injustice when we can, and we're always striving as the bottom line to try and make the system more accountable and more just for Aboriginal people. But there's no doubt that there's a hell of a long way to go. The fact that there's 40% of the total prison population is Aboriginal and between 70 and 80% of the total juvenile detention population is Aboriginal is testament to the fact that there's a long way to go. And there's a lot of hard work ahead of not only the ALS but everybody else involved in the justice system to try and redress some of those problems.
All right, Pete, we appreciate you coming in on the final show for the year and just filling us in on some of the issues that we've been working along in this year. Christmas message to anyone listening?
Oh, I'd just like to wish everybody a really happy and safe festive season and try and keep out of trouble if you can.
All right. Now, just to remind our listeners that the Aboriginal Legal Service will actually be closed at 12 o'clock noon on Friday the 24th of December 2010 and reopen at Wednesday 5th of January. Thanks for your company. Bye-bye.